Hello and welcome to another episode of the Principal Liner Notes podcast. This is Sean Gaylord here with Katie Roby, and this is a connected conversation. And this is actually, in many ways, Katie, perhaps a sequel to my appearance on your podcast, The Music Variety. What was that, a couple of years ago?
I believe it was this past year, like in January, February,
Yeah.
earlier in the year.
Yeah, we're on the verge of a new year. We can't keep up, but I'm excited that you're here. We have followed each other and been connected through music and all kinds of good things. Katie is a senior. She is an English major with a minor in secondary English education at Simpson College in Indianola, Iowa. And we've already made many references in the pre-conversation here to Iowa. And in addition to being in her senior year, Katie is on the verge of starting a career in teaching, and she will be student teaching next semester. And also, in addition to that, Katie serves as a writing consultant as well at Simpson. Katie, welcome to the Principal Liner Notes podcast. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you, Sean. I'm very excited to be here, be on the podcast. So, yeah, I'm very excited to see what we talk about, where our conversation leads. So,
Yes, this is completely unscripted, improvised. As I told you right before we hit record, this is like Mountain Jam. There's going to be some riffing. There's going to be we're there's no set list. So, I know that you're getting ready to start student teaching next semester, and I know pretty much what kind of led to our connection is our mutual admiration for the integration of music and teaching. It's very much the premise of the Pepper Effect, my book, and I know that that's something that you have also explored as well. So for those who are listening, Katie, who may not be familiar with the integration of music and teaching, I would just love for you to kind of give your take on it.
So for me, kind of like you said, I love music. We both find a lot of connection through music. I find that I can connect with other people through music. So whether that's kind of just how we're connecting here, people on my campus I've connected really well with through music, whether it's professors, staff, faculty, students. And so I think it's just a great way to build those connections. And I would love to bring music into my classroom as a way to build connections with students. So I'm really into older music. I don't really listen to much past the 90s. So, my students will probably not be as familiar with some of the music I listen to, but I could be surprised. So I think being able to engage students through music and tie it into literature, I think will be a really interesting way to just kind of explore different ways that I can teach. And I think in a sense, music is literature, it's poetry. I mean, we have a lot of great musicians in the past, like Bob Dylan, Bruce Springsteen, who really just kind of write this prose and then put it into song format. So I think just being able to incorporate this in the classroom will be really great, whether it's teaching a lesson or just something students walk into and listen, what's the song of the day. So I think it'll be just kind of cool seeing what I do with music and how that'll work in the classroom. So.
I'm excited to hear about that, and I know in some way, shape, or form, we talked about how hopefully you'll be able to capture this in a blog or maybe it's the teaching version of your podcast, The Music Variety, which right now is kind of on hiatus as you're wrapping up the semester and getting to ramp up into student teaching. As you were kind of sharing those connections between music and teaching and literature, I was thinking back to probably my earliest memory of when I experienced that as a kid, where I saw music being integrated into the classroom, and that was actually through my father. He taught a CCD class, Sunday school class, years and years ago, back in the 70s, when we were living in Southern California, and I was about 6 years old, and I remember how my dad brought in the song As from song Stevie Wonder Songs in the Key of Life, and he used that song to illustrate something that he was teaching in in Sunday school, probably something about God's infinite love. I remember that vaguely being the lesson. So that was kind of the first experience that I had of that. For you, what was kind of your first aha moment where you saw music and teaching or literature meld?
I think for me, it would have been my senior year of high school. I took a poetry class. It was kind of an elective. So your senior year, you were able to take, you could take senior English. I took AP Literature and Composition, and I love English. So I was like, I want to take as many English classes as I can. So I took poetry. And one of the assignments was we had to look at different artists who were bringing in a lot of social themes into their work. So I remember one group had to look at U2, another group had to look at Bruce Springsteen, another had to look at, I know Bob Dylan came in there as well. I know there was several other artists. Billy Joel might have been another one. And so I was sitting there and I'm like, this is really cool, like bringing in music and showing that music runs a lot deeper than we might recognize, and that there's a lot of heavy themes that you can bring in there and using words to convey those emotions along with sound. So that to me was like, yeah, that would be really cool if I'm a teacher someday to do that. And at the time, I didn't start out in secondary education. I started out in elementary. And it wasn't until my first semester at college that I realized, yeah, I want to be an English teacher. And so kind of seeing that used in the classroom as a student, especially, was really cool. And I was really engaged with that lesson. So I think that really sticks out to me. And then just like having teachers maybe mention names of musicians. Yeah, so like this musician took inspiration from this author. So I think just in those ways, that's really what stands out to me.
Gotcha. In terms of artists and musicians, I know that we have a mutual love for the Beatles. Which Beatles albums stand out for you?
Gosh, that's a really tough question.
No, I get asked this all the time too.
Yep. I mean, for me, I think it depends on my stage in life, so where I'm at, what I'm experiencing. And right now I've really felt a deep connection with Sgt. Pepper's. So right now I'm completing my senior capstone, which is a big project you do the whole semester, and I kind of see it as like my Sgt. Pepper's, like the pinnacle of my English major career. And so to me, I've been, listening to that album, and it has a really close connection. In the past, it's been Revolver, Let It Be, even the first album. So yeah, I think it just kind of depends on where I'm at in life, but right now it's probably Sgt. Pepper's. So it's a great question though. They're all great albums. So
You mentioned several great albums by the Beatles, but I appreciate the connection to your capstone project, which I know is a masterpiece, and Sgt. Pepper being this audacious masterpiece as well. So I can I it, those that kinship there, I'm sure, is very, very inspiring. I have also been often asked, and this is year 32 for me in education, why teaching? Why English teaching? I get a lot of weird looks. I'm kind of used to that because I'm a weird person. But then the looks get even weirder, and sometimes the distance gets a little broader when I mention I'm in education. And that I used to be an English teacher, or even if I mention I'm a principal, boy, some people wig out. So, what called you to the noble profession of teaching?
So I think for me, this seems to be an answer that I hear a lot, but to me, it rings very true. So I am very passionate about English. I love literature. I could sit down for a whole day just with a cup of tea, cup of coffee, and just talk about my favorite books and favorite authors. And I think for me to be able to share that passion and that excitement for literature with students and to be able to reach students, I think that is something that I'm very excited for. And I go in knowing that not every student is going to like to read. I'm going to have some students that say English is their least favorite subject. But hopefully, through my classes, I can show them, you don't necessarily have to have English as your favorite subject. But I hope that they can take something away, whether it's something they enjoyed, something they found interesting. So I think that for me is what I'm very excited to go experience as a teacher, and why I really decided that I do want to be an English teacher. And from my experience and my observations, it just has felt, I guess in a way, I feel at peace and a lot of joy in experiencing the classroom, getting to kind of do some lessons here and there. So it's definitely something that, yeah, this feels right for me. So,
you know, and music to me was that entry point for the reluctant reader or for the student that felt like a misfit in class or felt like a misfit in school. So I always found, like, you know, if I could bring in an album, even if it was something from my kind of background or collection, and like you, I listened to, you know, growing up, I listened to a lot of the old music. So when everyone was listening to, you know, REM or Run DMC, I was listening to the Beatles and James Brown. You know, I always was fascinated by the folks that influenced the music that was popular of my day, growing up. So it, and often again, I'd get weird looks and I didn't get invited to a lot of social occasions, but again, I always found that music was that kind of emollient for the classroom. It was that salve that could bring that sense of comfort, help to amplify student voice. Do you have a particular piece of music in mind where, you know, I'm reading this book right now, I'm reading this poem right now, and this song or this album goes beautifully together?
I don't know if any like directly come to mind. Well, I guess one that has recently come to mind. So I just finished reading Deliver Me From Nowhere by Warren Zanes, which is his analysis on Bruce Springsteen's Nebraska album.
Yeah.
And it was a great book. And he talked a lot about how Bruce Springsteen was inspired by Flannery O'Connor's writing, which in a lot of the literature courses I've taken, we've read Flannery O'Connor. So if that was something that I was to teach, I think I would play Nebraska for students, or we would play a song or have them listen to it as homework, and then look at that side by side with Flannery O'Connor's writing. And just, there's a lot of these heavier, dark themes that are really working through. I think just how language, you know, helps to convey those emotions and those feelings and what's happening. So I think that to me would be the one I would think about at the moment, but I'm sure there's others that I could tie in if I kind of sat down and thought about it.
Yeah, that Nebraska is by far my favorite Springsteen album, and it is one of the most understood. It's an album that is not for everybody because it's very dark. It is very film noir. It deals with loss and pain and anguish, which is a thread in Springsteen's work. But to me, it's such an eclectic little album because he essentially recorded that album at his kitchen table, and then he tried to do it with the E Street Band or studio musicians, and it didn't. It didn't, he did, he kept going back to the demo, and the demo ended up being the album. And, it's to me, and I love this kind of Nebraska, kind of renaissance in the last few years or so, because it's an album that has been recognized as one of his masterpieces. So I definitely have to check out that book. I've read a couple of excerpts. I think it was excerpted in Mojo Magazine or Uncut, one of those.
I would highly recommend. I mean, before reading the book, I had a lot of respect for this album. And I just reading this book really made me realize how much of a risk it was for him to put it out there, because it was so different from anything else he had put out there. But it was just this hauntingly beautiful piece that just happens to just be this wonderful masterpiece. And what's really interesting is you learn it was supposed to be an album with Born in the USA, but then he felt, no, this has to be on its own. But without Nebraska, Born in the USA would have never happened. And it just kind of leads right into there. But Warren Zanes does an excellent job of writing about the album, doing his analysis, talking with Springsteen. I would highly recommend. It was a great read. Yeah, if you want to learn more about Nebraska, to anyone who's listening to this podcast, I would highly recommend that novel.
And I'm sure, being from Iowa, I mean, again, there's this kind of Midwestern vibe in the album that I'm sure that you pick up on immediately, right?
Oh, for sure, for sure. I mean, he captures that extremely well throughout the album, and it's like, yeah, this I can see the Midwest landscape right in this album. It is his imagery is incredible. It's yeah.
You know, Springsteen too, which I also appreciate about his work and which is highly teachable, is Springsteen himself very much. Not only does he appreciate the written word, but he also appreciates art, film, literature, and a lot of those things influence and inspire him directly. There's a lot of that in you know, in that particular album, which almost, and if I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong, it did Highway Patrolman actually inspired a film, if I'm not mistaken, if it was directed by Sean Penn, maybe.
Maybe I would have to look more into that one. I'm
Yeah.
not sure if I covered that, but that sounds like something that would have for sure.
We'll have to check that. I'll have to get the folks in the fact checkers on Principal Liner Notes to check that out. And actually, my good friend Max Pizarro, who is from New Jersey, who's been on the podcast, he was on the podcast earlier this year, and he's a writer and a political reporter, political editor in New Jersey, and he's written a little bit about Bruce Springsteen, and actually lived in the same county as Springsteen. And Max has a story. I have to get Max on to tell that story, with kind of his close encounter with Bruce Springsteen from afar at a bookstore magazine stand. I'll have to ask Max about that and get him back on. Max, if you're listening, let's talk Nebraska on a future episode of Principal Liner Notes, and we'll get your take on it. But he's a big Springsteen fan. Speaking of earlier, we talked about the Beatles, and I did have a minor request of you, Katie, and I want us to talk about, and I would love to hear your take on what is being billed as the last Beatles song, Now and Then, which just came out last month, and it is something. So I would love to hear your take on that as a Beatles fan and connoisseur of music.
So when I first heard the Beatles were putting out their last single, there was so many emotions going through my mind, and I was like, how am I supposed to interpret this? And after kind of sitting down with it for a while, I realized that I was living in a historic moment that I hadn't lived before, where I get to see and be at the moment where I get to hear a Beatles single released. And as a huge lifelong Beatles fan, this was something that was very emotional and just very powerful to me. As you know, even though the Beatles broke up however many years ago, it's like I still get to experience that as a fan. And so to me, it was very exciting. And everyone on campus knows me as the Beatles fan. So everyone was asking me, oh, are you ready for the new single? And I would just tell people, yeah, I can't wait. And so I was able to kind of find a moment of quiet in our dorm where it was just me, and I was able to just sit down and listen to it. And it was very emotional, but it was very exciting to hear this song. I loved it. I thought it was really neat just hearing the whole story about how they weren't able to create it when they were doing the anthology sessions. And it was just like to see it happen was, again, it was a very powerful moment. And it was really neat just to see all four of them, in a sense, come together and be able to put out this last song. So I loved it. I thought it was great. I've talked with many people on our campus about it. I have a professor, he's a communications professor. I took a Beatles class with him during May, and I reached out to him, and we kind of talked about it, and we both were like, this is amazing. So, yeah.
You know, I very much identify with your story there, and even thinking back to my days in college, I love how you were identified as the Beatles fan, and that everyone, you know, you've got this network that kind of checks in on you. So I have a similar kind of network. Anything that Beatles comes up or what have you. So I too had to kind of like steal away at school just a couple of minutes when the song debuted on November 2nd. I think it was at 11 o'clock or noon my time, and just very emotional. So and again, you and I did not grow up in the 60s, although I always like to say that I was around during the Beatles era. I was born on the same day as Let It Be, May 8th, 1970. So I got in just, but again, to experience as a fan, something that folks experienced in the 60s, like, wow, the countdown, the urgency, the hype, the excitement of a new Beatles song. It's very emotional for us fans who feel deeply about this band, and the fact that the story of this song, it took, nearly, 40 years for the song to be finalized, is very powerful, on a lot of different levels.
It was a great experience. I don't think I'll ever be able, I don't know if we'll experience anything like that again with this being the last song, but just to be in that moment was really neat. It's like, okay. And I bought my single, so it was awesome.
Nice. Yes, I not only did I buy a couple of copies of the single, I bought the 12-inch, and then I also bought the cassette version, which I just love, with John's the facsimile of John's writing on one side, and then Paul with the B side being "Love Me Do," which was the first Beatles single, and all four of them are on there, and the video is so moving, as
Yes.
well. Man, I wept through that video. It was so powerful.
I did too, don't worry.
Yeah, okay, good. We're not alone. I know there was some controversy when Paul mentioned about the release of Now and Then and how they used AI, and they had to clarify that statement that this was not an artificial, made song. Like John Lennon's vocal, basically they used AI type of technology to isolate the original vocal for John Lennon, so that it could be finished properly. And I know that we talked a little bit about AI and things that you will have to anticipate as a student teacher, and I know you've done a little bit of work with this as a writing consultant at Simpson College. So I'd love to kind of hear your take on AI, not only as a college student, but also your take on AI as a soon to be educator.
Yeah, that's just with the nature of AI, there's so many ways that, we could see AI, whether it's I know a lot of people who are very, very against AI. I know some people are like, this could be a good tool. And I think in a way there's a balance to it because I mean, how the Beatles used it, I think works very well. I mean, if it's there, let's use it to isolate those vocals. And knowing the Beatles, and they were always, thinking about technology and how can we use it. I think honestly, in a way, it's like, yeah, this makes sense. But at the same time, I'm also not a huge fan of artists who are trying to create vocals with AI. I'm kind of hesitant on that. So I'm like, well, okay. But I think how the Beatles are using it in a way, let's get this song out there. I think that was beautiful. And it's like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. And I think with writing, I've worked with a couple of professors, and we've kind of talked about how AI can be used to generate ideas for a paper. So let's say you're stuck, and it's like, maybe you don't know what to write. Let's see what AI can pull up, and if you have ideas about this novel. I've talked with education professors about how maybe you're struggling to create questions or something for your students. Maybe see if AI can help out. So I think using it, as a resource and a tool to help navigate certain areas, I think can be beneficial. But I would encourage students to stay away from, if you want to write an essay, just write it out, see what you can create, because there is something to being able to create your own work and, form your own ideas. And with AI, that really takes away from that process. And the writing process, I love the writing process. It's beautiful, it's messy sometimes, but you end up with something that's really extraordinary. And so I always encourage students, if you need some ideas, you can go to AI, but really try to hone in on that creativity, really hone in on those ideas, and it'll be, you'll create something that you're very proud of. So it's definitely that balance of how do we navigate it, how do we use it as a tool, but also not relying on it too heavily, I think is kind of that key there. So.
Well, well stated, my friend. And just out of curiosity, I know you know a little bit about your curriculum and what you'll be teaching next semester, for the student teaching gig. Do you have a particular literary piece that you're looking forward to teaching, or that you have a desire to delve into?
I'm not sure what exactly I'll be teaching with student teaching, but let's just say options are wide open and student teaching is in the future. I love American literature, specifically the 20th century, and I just developed a unit plan for one of my classes over The Great Gatsby. I feel like this is a typical novel that's taught in most schools, but I love it. I love F. Scott Fitzgerald and his writing. So to be able to teach one of the great American literary works like The Great Gatsby would be just awesome. I would love to share that excitement and that passion for that novel with students. So.
It's a novel that I usually have at a finger it's a fingertip away for me from me, and it's a novel that really compelled me. It was the novel that compelled me to want to teach. That was the one that did it for me. And speaking of music and literature, and I remember I did this towards the end of my teaching tenure. Bob Dylan, on his Love and Theft album, has a song called Summer Days, and it is an incredible, just upbeat, almost rockabilly-ish type of song. And he quotes Gatsby: "Can't repeat the past. Why, of course you can. You can repeat the past." So that was always an excuse to bring in Dylan. And it just fit in beautifully into the as kind of a soundtrack for all of Gatsby's lavish parties, and the fact that Dylan quoted Gatsby. I always just thought that was cool. So if and when you get to Gatsby, that's your excuse, that's your backdoor to bring in some music and Bob Dylan.
For sure. I have to bring in Bob Dylan in the classroom. He's one of my favorite musicians. So, of course, gotta find a way.
So, speaking of favorite musicians, and I know you're known as the Beatles fan, and I am too, and most of us think that for us Beatle fans, that they think that that's the only thing we listen to. Yes, but there are other great musicians, maybe not as great as the Beatles. So, but who else is on your turntable? Who else do you go to? Who are your go-tos?
So, I mean, just as we've mentioned through this podcast, I'm a huge Bruce Springsteen fan. His music is very inspiring to me. Really discovered his music after graduating high school. Bob Dylan, of course, and then Tom Petty, his solo work, and then Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. His music really stands out to me. I like U2. I guess any of those. So John Mellencamp as well. I really like the Heartland rock musicians. Bob Seger, the Eagles, any of those kind of 70s soft rock bands. So kind of just an eclectic, but definitely more of that rock territory, especially folk. Throughout high school, again, I had really interesting music tastes compared to my peers, but the Byrds were, that was my favorite band in high school aside from the Beatles. So the Byrds have always had a pretty lasting impact on me. So I'd say a lot of those are ones I regularly listen to. Billy Joel's another one. I was listening to him this morning, so.
Yeah, the Byrds, that was a band that I discovered hardcore in high school, and I remember picking up, all of their studio albums, and the Notorious Byrd Brothers is my favorite album of theirs, and it was nice. I don't know if you did you see Daisy Jones and the Six?
I haven't yet. I've read the book and I've been wanting to watch it, but I've heard good things about it.
Well, there is a very cool nod to the Byrds in the first episode of Daisy Jones and the Six, the miniseries. I love the book. I've read it a few times. The miniseries I highly recommend over winter break. Check it out. You and your mom, you'll definitely enjoy it and dig it. But there's a nice little quick nod. If you blink, you'll miss it. But there is a quick nod to the Notorious Byrd Brothers. They're 1968, and they're kind of like their Sgt. Pepper, their masterpiece. So, yes, all great musicians and all great things. And in terms of the music variety, so for those folks, I know it's on hiatus, but maybe explain a little bit about that podcast and its inception and its meaning.
Yeah, so when I started out as a freshman on Simpson College, this kind of gives backstory to how did I even start a radio show, because I never would have thought I would have ever had a radio show. We came in during COVID, and so we were pretty limited in what we could do with groups. There weren't really activities that were happening, and I wanted to still find a way that I could be involved in Simpson, be connected, be a part of some organization. And so someone reached out and said, hey, would you be interested in running a radio show? And I'm like, you know what, let's try it out. So my freshman year, I did a show focused on reading. It was just about books. I love books. But I realized that, you know, it wasn't as engaging as I would like it to be. So why don't we just switch the reading variety over to the music variety? I love music. And I just talked about a bunch of different artists, different music that I love. And so just I would bring in other guests as well. So you were a guest. I had Jason Wolfsmith, who is a local musician. And then I would have other friends come on and talk about music, people that like the same music as me. And then I would also do kind of just solo work on my own, talk about different artists. And it was a really great experience. I think it's kind of one of those things that really helped shape me as a student on campus. And I really enjoyed doing that. And I'd like to kind of carry that after Simpson, whether it's through a blog, maybe doing another podcast. But yeah, just talking about a bunch of different music. It was really great, really fun. So that's kind of the birth of that, and then kind of what that looked like. So,
well, I really value your podcast, and I value what you've done with it, and made it like this kind of homegrown radio show with different guests. And I know it's on Spotify. I know it's on many podcast platforms, and I would recommend that folks check out the music variety. And right now it's on hiatus, but some of the great works of art came from a hiatus. So we think about the Beatles. When the Beatles stopped touring, you know, they took a break, and then they went back in the studio and recorded Sgt. Pepper. So I see a new phase on the horizon for the music variety. And Katie, I would also suggest and even implore you, maybe at your student teaching gig, maybe you start a school podcast, or maybe get your students to create something, and that could be something that you could leave a legacy for, or you know, add some value. I'm sure I just see you producing and teaching other students how to craft and create their own podcast.
That would be awesome. I do wish that my high school had some sort of, I know some high schools I've heard are able to do like podcasts and stuff. And I think if I had had that in high school, that would have been awesome. So to be able to also maybe provide that experience or help shape students through maybe a podcast platform, or how do you start a podcast? I think that would be awesome. And just a really great way to inspire students. Maybe students want an outlet to talk about what they're passionate about, or for other educators. I think that would be really cool.
I totally see that. Or maybe it's a creative alternative assessment, where when you're teaching Gatsby or whatever it is, or Their Eyes Are Watching God, there's a podcast about that. And maybe you've got a host interviewing Gatsby, and a student is pretending to be Gatsby or Nick or whoever, Daisy or whoever it may be. So I think with your gift for broadcasting and your appreciation for music and literature, I just see that being a really cool extension in the classroom in some way, shape, or form. So I look forward to, I'm holding you to this. So I, you know,
that's good.
Yeah, I'm holding you to this. So I think it would just be a wonderful thing for you and your students and your colleagues to do.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to look into that and see how do we get this started, but that would be awesome.
Well, Katie, I've really enjoyed speaking with you, and I'm looking forward to continuing to follow your journey often on the podcast. I have folks that are either in the twilight of their career or in the middle of their career, and I'm very honored to have somebody who is just starting her career in teaching, and I know that many who are tuning in right now are pulling for you and are supportive and are just grateful that you have taken your first giant step, nod to Coltrane, into the world of teaching, and I know that you're going to make such an incredible impact, and your students are going to have their world changed because of you.
Well, thank you. I hear a lot about, teaching. I've heard a lot of, there's a teacher shortage. It's exhausting, but with the support from so many great people like you, people at our Simpson community, and just other people, I feel so supported with such an amazing community and group of people that, even if I'm going to come across difficulties, I think there's going to be more good days than bad. Not every day is going to be perfect, but I feel so supported and encouraged. And it has been such an amazing feeling, and I feel, I'm ready to do this. So thank you again for the support and your encouragement. So I really appreciate it.
Oh, the honor is all mine. You are the Pepper Effect, my friend. We'll get ready to sign off here with the typical sign off in which I usually state, but I'm going to do kind of a remix on this. I have a little bit of a thought. So, don't forget to share with the world your dreams, your ideas, and your visions, because the world needs them, and you help make the world a better place. And folks like Katie Robey, who are getting ready to take their first step into the noble profession, you are changing the world, and the world is better because of it. So thank you on behalf of everyone in the noble profession, Katie. Welcome to the wonderful world of teaching.
Thank you, Sean. I appreciate it.
Got it. This is the
Yeah.
Principal Liner Notes podcast. Again, follow the music variety, Katie's podcast. It's on hiatus right now, but there are plenty of episodes to check out. If you're a Springsteen fan or Beatles fan, she goes all over the place. It really is wonderful. The music variety, you can catch it on Spotify. And then also, little small plug for our favorite band, Now and Then, the last single by the Beatles, the last Beatles song. Catch it, download it, find it. It's there for you. This is the Principal Liner Notes podcast. Sean Gaylord signing off. Catch you on the flip side.